Hello and welcome to The Inside Dish, where we explore the culinary, distillery, and the winery arts in and around the Lehigh Valley. I'm Mike Drabenstadt, host for your gastronomic tour of the region's amazing food and beverage scene. I'm here with Russell Fletcher, who is CEO and a master distiller, I love that title, of Mishka Premium Vodka in Allentown. Russell, welcome to The Inside Dish.
Oh, I'm happy actually to be here. Thank you guys for inviting me on. Like, it's actually a great thing.
Well, we're happy to have you. So I know the whole category of craft distilling has been coming on strong in the past 5 or 10 years, but you were ahead of the curve, having launched your business in 2007, if I read right, around 15 years ago?
Yep, 2007, 2008, right along the cusp of that year. Absolutely.
I was going to ask, what were you seeing at the time that gave you the idea to start in the beverage industry?
Actually, there was two levels of inspiration for me. One, with Tito's coming on pretty strong. He's just celebrating 20 years. And then there was another gentleman who had created a formulation in his parents' garage. And the name of the product was Hypnotic. It was like a blue tint product, but it was a mixture of various alcohols. But I kind of took both of their stories and kind of blended them a little bit. Tito with his fortitude of just the craft spirits and owning a small distillery and being able to try to or looking at battling the imports, and then Rafael Jacoby with his Hypnotic product, which was again was kind of like a mixture, and it was more so for cocktails within itself. So what I did was kind of looked at it and wanted to create something that was going to be a little bit differently, but can also, you know, angle both of those sides of it. And I started with wine, and the Lehigh Valley within, I think the article I had read, it was roughly about 8 to 10 years ago, and they were speaking about how the Lehigh Valley was going to be the next Napa Valley or the Napa Valley of the East Coast.
Right.
And I knew that there was going to be some room as far as for craft spirits and things that would, you know, that would be a little bit niche, which is what our main goal was. So from transitioning from wine and then going into spirits, it was kind of it was easy. It was an easy transition from the formulation side, but just not as easy from the licensing side.
Got it. So how'd you actually, start refining your craft and your knowledge? Are you self-taught? Did you have mentors out there? What was your process?
From the winemaking, I learned how to make wine in the garage. I actually learned how to make spirits in a garage and a little bit in North Carolina as my fiance at the time and now my wife currently. We had taken, I started off with learning wine and I entered into a couple different amateur events in New Jersey when we were living in New Jersey. And I kind of had a good knack for it, for the formulation, which led to a formula for our first product, which was a sparkling wine that we released in 2010. But then I wanted to kind of just get a hold of the spirits industry because with the wine margins thinning and being some difficulty if you don't own the vineyard all the way up,
right,
you know, to the production side of it, you know, you lose a lot as far as within the margins. And I thought the spirits was just the way to actually go. So I figured that it was best for me to go ahead and, you know, kind of just transition to be able to obviously be able to feed my family, put food on the table, and to be able to be taken serious from a business standpoint, looking at it from a business standpoint. But then also at the same time, I had people, with my wife being Ukrainian, you know, they're big on their vodka. And then we took roughly about a 7 to 8 month tour. We kept coming back and forth to Pennsylvania, but I learned more things, picked up little bits of equipment to start kind of formulating Mishka, which it is today.
So unlike other craft distillers, either here in Pennsylvania or Lehigh Valley or elsewhere that have a lot of different spirits, a variety of spirits, you focus just on vodka, right?
That is exactly what we did. And, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, Mike, because, again, you know, a lot of distilleries, they pump out a lot of products and, you know, it makes it a little bit difficult, I feel, for a customer to be able to make a choice. And, of course, you know, it all works within your business plan. Similar, like, we don't have a tasting room for people to sample the product. We prefer for people to go to the restaurants or go to the fine wine and spirit stores here in Pennsylvania because we feel like that kind of closes the loop. From the restaurant, from our shop to the restaurant, then back to the stores. I think that it feeds everybody within the process. But I wanted to focus primarily on vodka, but I also wanted to do it in a again in a niche way, which is why we started with Honey Vodka, which is our flagship product still, and I feel like it still has the most legs. And then we bought out our corn-based regular vodka, and then we followed up with the cranberry. But that was our route.
Well, I found that unique, you know, looking at the products that you offer, because usually you think of vodka in the traditional sense, and it's prized for its neutrality or its nuance. And I saw, man, they got honey and they got cranberry, and that, like you said, kind of with the hypnotic, it has a certain color to it, and that cranberry is a bright red, which is really atypical yeah. for a vodka. And I imagine that's one of the attractions, is that you're doing something that a lot of people aren't.
You're 100% right, and thank you for actually doing a lot of reading into it. You're so abreast on the product, which is fantastic. But yeah, you know, just going back to it, we wanted to stay niche, but we wanted to also be able to make sure we brought products to the forefront that actually have a place in the mind of a bartender, in the mind of an owner, and on a back bar. We want our products to be a go-to. Take, for instance, the honey vodka. Honey vodka can reduce the use of simple syrup. The cranberry vodka. Cranberry vodka is normally 9 times out of 10 most people go to. What we tried to do is be able to make sure that we can kind of play to what goes into the glass or what's going into a bar or, you know, what's going to be simple for an at-home drinker to be able to say, you know what, I'm going to pour this cranberry vodka, add a little bit of soda, add a little bit of ice, and it's a cocktail within itself. You don't have to be overly experienced in, to be able to have a good barbecue in any sense.
And at what point would the honey and the cranberry be brought into the distilling process? Is that during the process? Is it done afterwards for those flavors to be infused?
It's definitely after the process. I know a lot of people, they try to pull off, even with mead, with the honey, and you know, kudos to them.
Yeah.
But I think that from batch to batch, you get something really, really different. And I think that within the distilling process, I think that it's best to add in your flavors afterwards. But also that leads back to, how are you flavoring? If you notice, we stand on this all natural podium that we stand on, and it's because of the fact that it is all natural. There's nothing added. There's no food coloring. There's no compounded sugars. There's none of those things. If you get cranberry, we buy the cranberry in the raw. You know, we blend it down to be able to make sure that it's palatable. But we like to preserve that real cranberry taste. You know, most people are used to drinking, you know, the cranberry cocktail juice,
right?
And you don't get that you don't get the cranberry bite on the back of it. But with our product, you know, it's smooth enough, but it still gives you the remnants of, you know, real cranberry for those who are seeking that.
Well, with the cranberry juice, you're really drinking high fructose corn syrup. Let's be serious, right?
I'm trying to be nice about it, but you know, but you understand.
Well, it wasn't the guest who said it; it was the host, right?
But at the same time, you know, this is where we stand on our all natural aspect, because you get the high fructose corn syrup, you get those compounded sugars. It tastes great when it's in your cocktail. You know, it works on your smell, which is really where it hits you at, you know, with the add-ons. But I learned a long time ago from mentors in the spirits industry, you know, a lot of these products are synthetic. A lot of our competitors, they do have synthetic products. I understand. But I like to think about the quality of the cocktail, whether knowing that our all-natural formulas can stand up to all the acidities, whatever a bartender might want to do, it's going to enhance the cocktail. But also at the same time, again, just to be able to close that circle, that end user shouldn't wake up with a horrible headache because they're drinking all of that sugar down. And not obviously, you know, we're less conscious when we're drinking a lot to balance everything with water 1-to-1. So we try to kind of take care of that in any sense.
So I'm wondering, I remember reading at some point, I don't know if it's still the case, that vodka is the most popular spirit in the world. I imagine that's probably still the case, if not pretty close or up near the top. And I'm wondering how a distillery like yours would compete against, you know, the multinational corporations out there to get in front of the consumer from a distribution standpoint, from a marketing standpoint. I mean, what's it like, you know, sharing shelf space with, you know, the Smirnoffs and the Grey Gooses of the world?
Wow. You know what? So I'll bring you through a little journey now. So currently, we've got a customer base or potential customers in Target for the Chicago market, all the way down through the Midwest, all the way to Louisiana, and then we have Walmart for 5 different markets that they're looking to bring us aboard for next year. Target this year, Walmart next year. Then we have relationships with the Hyatt, with the main, you know, the main company for the nation, with the Hyatt and also with the Wyndham. And right now we're lobbying the largest distribution company in the world, actually, to be able to take our product on. But considering the fact of things that happened, obviously, with COVID, a lot of companies, especially smaller distilleries, are kind of, I'm not going to say in shambles, but a little upside down with certain things. And, you know, we're just fighting for, you know, for them to take a shot with us. But how we're looking to take care of that is by bringing customers to them. Same with the PLCB, with the Fine Wine and Spirits. We're currently in conversations as far as with them to be able to get more shelf space. But our way to combat all of the hecticness and that retail space that everyone's fighting for is by bringing something niche. We know that no one has a honey vodka that's as well as well put together as ours, a cranberry vodka that's as tasty as ours, and even our neutral product. We hear it time and time again. Just recently, even at the Bethlehem event that we did with the Chamber of Commerce, you know, we have something. We have something really, really good. So for us, with the country opening up, it's really about liquid to lips for us. We have to get people to taste the product. And a lot of our marketing dollars go into just basically into our spirits and getting out samples for people to actually try, because we feel like the best way is word of mouth after people taste the product. But it is a task. And you know, I don't know how others navigate, but at the same time, we're currently looking to be Pennsylvania's premium spirit, number one premium spirit, but we're also stretching out to the rest of the nation to see exactly how we can open it up and get the product out.
That's great. From Allentown to the rest of the U.S. and maybe beyond, right? I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
So, hey, Russell, I think I read on your website that you have the distinction of being the first minority-owned distillery in the U.S. Is that right?
Second in the U.S. Okay. At the time when I was actually applying, we had our wine license. But because the state of Pennsylvania had never dealt with someone wanting a dual license, it took us roughly about a year and a half to be able to get the licensing done. So within that time, a gentleman from New York, he had gotten his license also. But yeah, it placed us in second and first in Pennsylvania, but obviously the first from a minority diversity standpoint to actually own the dual licenses at the same time.
That's great. You know, I was curious whether there were any you know, particular challenges that you thought you faced, or whether even on the flip side of that, whether there are opportunities either for you or opportunities for people after you to come on board.
Well, that's the goal in any sense. You know, at the time, that wasn't even in my mind. I just knew that I formulated something really nice, and in order to be able to actually bring it, you know, bring it to the forefront, I knew I had to do it legally. So with the help from the people that I had around me, I wanted to make sure that I got everything on board. And you know, I feel like at this point, with the story getting out, and it's a blessing that it came out the way it came out, especially during the climate that we're in right now.
Right.
I'm hoping that it would inspire more people to kind of jump into it. Yes, it is like any other business. There are risks in any sense. But at the same time, I also hope to be kind of a guide for people, if I can be, you know, as far as with spirits. And I've gotten multiple calls from around the nation, fortunately, and emails with people who are admirable of the story, and then also asked for help and had questions. Again, this is a situation to where there are multiple people in the state, in the country more so, who own distilleries, and I think that's awesome, because we should be focusing on taking some of the rev share from the imports that are coming in. So I encourage people to jump in. I think that the spirits industry is going to continue to boom. Our population continues to boom. So every day, I'm sure multiple people turn, or thousands of people turn 21, and, you know, they're going to indulge in any sense. And for me, I just want to be a guide here in the United States, and also as we're fledging out into multiple other countries, to let people know that they could actually do it. From a challenge side of it, I can honestly say that from the PLCB and also from the TTB, which is the federal organization that governs alcohol, if you ask the question, the answers are there, and it's their job to actually give you the answers. So I always tell people, you know, things come with their challenges. But if you take the time out to ask the question, which no question is a dumb question, especially if you're going to jump into something like this, which is going to cost you six figures at the start of it, I think that you should ask all the questions, and they're going to give you the help because it's within their job description if you ask them the correct question.
So, Russell, I want to thank you here for joining us here at WDIY.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much, Mike. I greatly appreciate you guys again having us.
I'm Mike Drabenstadt, and this is The Inside Dish.